So
you're gonna have some spooky music.
I know, right? We gotta have it. Welcome back, everybody.
Good evening. Spooky.
Yes, it is spooky season finally. We are so excited. Welcome to Salem and Binks Presents, everyone. My name is Nina. I will be your Salem today.
And I am Tyler or Butter, and I will be your Binks today. Is that correct?
Yes, okay, so I want to make sure. Totally, no worries. we are so excited. I'm especially excited today because I get to have one of my greatest friends.
Oh, stop it.
Butter, get to be on the podcast today. Butter is one of those people that I just gravitate to every time we hang out and we just talk about movies and all things Halloween.
Favorite topic. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. This guy has the best DVD collection in the world, by the way.
Still growing. Still trying to. Yeah. Going to get the Guinness Book of World Record one day, hopefully.
Definitely. Definitely. So I couldn't be more excited to have him as a guest today. This is going to be a really fun one to begin the spooky season because we're just kicking it off the right way with the ultimate classic.
OG.
Yes. What are we going to be talking about?
Today we're going to be doing the 1978 hit Halloween.
Yes.
From one of the masters of horror, John Carpenter.
This film is a classic. If you haven't seen it, fucking watch it. It's great.
Honestly, it's one of the first movies I felt that really defines like a good horror movie. And it's like you don't really need a big scary like Dracula or Frankenstein or Swamp Thing, you know.
Yes.
It was just a classic serial killer, but it still had this great Halloween little twist to it, you know?
Yeah, the fact that they put it on Halloween night just gives it that extra atmosphere and mood that you crave this time of year when you want to watch something spooky.
I mean, and it's funny because even in the movie, most of the time the kids are sitting around watching a movie, you know, and it's like that's Halloween to like some kids or like some teenagers.
Yes.
Like, I mean, I remember in high school, like sometimes, like what do? We just stayed at home watching scary movies, you know?
Oh, totally. I mean, I think that's kind of why I started this whole podcast is just for, I guess, in our culture, one way to celebrate holidays is to just watch movies that we return to every year.
And honestly, it's a discussion every year, too, for some movies. It's like my favorite example is Nightmare Before Christmas. It's like that's a heated debate amongst, you know, movie people. Yeah. It's like, is it a Christmas? Is it a Halloween movie?
Right.
Let's just call it a holiday movie and move on. You know, it's a great movie. It's a musical, you know.
And some people get really like, you know, you can only watch it this time of year. You can only watch. And it's like, enjoy it whenever you want, guys. Like, that being said, we are fans of this film. We definitely have some questions, insights. I would say for me, I have a lot of questions.
Yes.
But Butter has a lot of insights. So.
Yes, I do. Because I really wanted to, like, you know, because my favorite thing with movies is always trying to find out the trivia or, like, some fun facts.
And it's just fun, though. The deeper you dig into movies like this, especially ones like this that kind of accidentally revolutionize that genre, I mean, you just end up finding out a lot of neat trivia and neat background stories that just really, I don't know, they kind of inspire me. I just find them so fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to start off with the B.O.B. We're going to get that guy out of the way. And then we'll talk about our initial experiences, impressions, and I guess initial thoughts on this film?
I guess, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Halloween, the B.O.B. Yes. Spooky wins. Okay. The most successful independent motion picture of all time, a horror classic that will scare you out of your wits. Michael Myers escaped from the Illinois State Mental Hospital after 15 years of treatment for the brutal murder of his sister and has returned to Haddonfield to relive his crime. What follows is a reign of terror. He came for Halloween and may return.
Halloween 2 in May.
Yeah, exactly.
Spring is sprung.
What if Michael can get out, but then, like, it's not Halloween? Like, what if he's like, this is the only time I can escape?
We get, like, shore leave during Christmas time. Yeah, or, like, you know, it's Valentine's Day. We're going to let you out.
Shit, I just can't murder if it's not Halloween.
Well, here's one of my first fun facts. Yes? Did you know that it was actually filmed during the springtime?
I did read that.
Yeah, and it was actually hard for them to find pumpkins. Oh, so they had to, like, pretty much, you know, hunt down pumpkins because it was springtime where they were at. I'm
well, like, they're that not is, even planted. No. Some of them aren't even planted yet.
Yeah, it's a time. Seasonal thing, yeah, you know, totally. Like Christmas trees.
Yeah. Oh my God. Well, I did hear that they, and it's funny because in Illinois, especially, like the trees would have definitely been turned, if not, you know, almost bare by Halloween. So it's like, they didn't, and all the trees are all filled, full green,
lush
beautiful.
Green, yeah. Yeah.
So it's kind of a tough one. And then on top of that, I read that they had, you know, this goes to show what, how easy craft supplies are and how accessible they are now. But I guess they couldn't find leaves that were like fall leaves. So they had like a bundle of leaves that they all had the staff paint. And like paint like different colors, and then they would like scatter them about for the scene, and then they'd have to pick them all up again and use them for another scene because that was like how low budge.
Oh my God.
Yeah, like
that's
legit.
Crazy though. I mean, well, because I even heard like things online saying that like Jamie Lee Curtis, she was her wardrobe designer.
Yeah.
She literally went with $100 to like a JCPenney and like went and bought all her clothes for Lori.
Which
and
is
I was
great.
Like, that's great. Cause yeah. cause she was actually out of the three main girls, she was the only one at the time who was a teenager.
Yeah.
So it was great that, hey, you're going to go pick out your clothes for your character because you're a teenager. Go pick out clothes.
Yeah.
And it was very modest and sensible, and I loved it, you know? Because, like, out of the three girls, yeah, she's probably the most normal, like, you know,
down-to-earth person.
Exactly.
Yeah. I loved that because just from, like, an actor's point of view, sometimes it's so fun to do your own costume because you are the person in charge of that look. So you kind of create
the look of your character. Exactly, yeah.
Butter.
Yes?
What are your initial experiences and impressions and opinions of this movie?
Well, I really like how it was shot, you know, and in my opinion, John Carpenter is definitely, if not the master of horror. I mean, because he's done so many great movies. I just really like the way this one was shot because, I mean, again, if I'm wrong, hopefully one of our listeners can correct me. I believe it's one of his first big movies that he tried to undertake. And it's just like some of those scenes where it's like you see Lori and the girls walking and it's just like it's just literally a shot and you can see them as they walk out of frame. But it's so well done to where it's just creepy. It gives you like this sense of feeling like somebody's watching you. And like literally like I love Michael because you don't he doesn't talk. All he does is just breathe and grunt. I mean,
right.
That would have been one of the craziest, like, you know, castings. Like, I just need a big guy who can breathe and grunt. Can you do that? Great. You're Michael Myers.
Exactly.
And it, like, it kind of has that, like, Jaws feel to it, too. It's like, in Jaws, you don't see the whole fish until literally, like, the last 20 minutes of the movie is when you finally get to see the whole fish. Like, you see the tail just coming out of the water. You see him bite real quick. You just see, like, little glimpses here. And that's what I loved about Michael. It's like, literally, he was just there and then disappeared and then there. And it was like, he didn't need to say anything. He didn't need to, like, go on these crazy killing sprees. It's like he doesn't have the body count like Jason, but he's definitely killed more people than Freddy, which is pretty crazy, in my opinion. You know.
See, that's, again, the insights that I would not have thought about. So grateful that you're here.
Why, thank you for having me.
So when was the first, do you remember the first time you saw this movie?
Let's see, I think it was like 4 hours ago. Because that's my problem. It's like, I don't want to say, you know, because I do claim myself as a big movie person. Mm-hmm. Now, over the last, like, 10 years, I want to say my horror taste has definitely grown. Like, I used to be the biggest baby in the world, and I still am the giant scaredy cat.
Yeah.
Like, in my opinion, good horror is in jump scares.
Right.
And
same.
There are a few, there's only like one or two jump scares in the new Halloween.
Mm.
I mean, in the OG Halloween. But it still like has a whole sense of just like building, that tension building.
Yes.
And I really have fallen in love with a lot of more like funnier, campy horrors.
Mm.
But I still love like just those well thought out, like one of my favorites is more of a, is The Thing, is John Carpenter's remake of the classic 1951 thing that he did in the 80s. And it's funny because that's the movie the kids are watching during.
Isn't
the
so
OG.
Cool?
Oh, it's so cool.
To go with that, what I like is that in horror, like just from a writing standpoint, you have certain archetypes that are for your villains.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so perfect that like there's no mistake that they're watching The Thing because Michael Myers is like a thing archetype, meaning like there's no reason. He just does it to do it.
And it's really like, because he can be anybody really too. It's like, it's like, yes, Michael Myers is a perfect example of just creepy horror, like psychopath. But it's still like that thing where that mentality is like, it could be anybody almost. Because he really has no characteristics.
Yeah.
He's just like, and that's what I loved about.
That's the scary part.
And it's funny because when they're figuring out a mask for him to wear, they had two choices. One, they had this old school, like, creepy clown mask that resembled the mask he wears when he's a little kid right before he kills his sister.
And I had wondered why they didn't go with that.
And then some of the other people picked a William Shatner Captain Kirk mask. They took off the sideburns and they painted it, they call it belly fish white. I don't know. It's an interesting color.
Like a bluish.
Exactly.
White. Yeah.
But the reason why they did this, so he would have no emotion. He's literally, his face is motionless.
Kind of
so,
ghost-like.
Exactly.
But still a man.
Because he literally comes in and out, like when she's like looking out, he's like so hanging out by the laundry. Oh, so creepy.
Yeah. No, they got him down in terms of the just aesthetic and the look and just his presence. And I think, like you said earlier, the fact that it could be anyone is the thing that makes this movie so good. Like him being in the suburbs and preying on innocent, you know, young people, it could be anyone. That's the scary part. Your killer could be in your backyard.
Because I know John Carpenter did a lot of research about this, because I was talking with my wife and I was like, it was very interesting. Every door was unlocked. Every front door during that time.
Totally.
And here's the thing, though. That was true.
Mm-hmm.
Like, during the 70s and stuff, people weren't afraid to leave their door unlocked. And it's funny. There was this serial killer in the Sacramento area named Richard Trent, who was named the Vampire of Sacramento, who went around killing people because they would leave their doors unlocked because he said they were inviting him in.
It's so sick.
And if the doors were locked, they basically were telling him, you're not welcomed.
Oh my God.
Isn't that creepy? Because that was bugging me. It was like nobody was locking any doors.
Yeah.
Like she was just leaving the kids upstairs like no problem. I'm like, ugh.
Oh my God. No, what is so interesting, that scene with, is it Annie or Lydia?
Which one?
The one with the dark hair.
That's Annie.
Annie. That scene with Annie where she goes in the garage, she's not really thinking about anything, she's singing, she gets so annoyed, visibly annoyed, that she goes to the car and pulls it and it's locked and she's like, oh God. Like, pissed off. And it's just like, today, obviously, because of these situations, like you said, like, we are so cautious and we, you know, we have the Ring and all these crazy security, everything because of these situations. But like, it was such a different time.
It was. I mean, again, it could just be, you know.
And that's why this movie worked so much then.
Back then, yeah. You know, and that's why, like, the newer one has, like, a kind of different twist to it. It's more of, like, you know, her versus him kind of thing.
Right.
But, like, that's where it works so well for the old school.
Yeah.
Now, speaking of Annie, she is such a strange character to me. Because, there's the scene right before she dies, where she's at the babysitter, where she's babysitting at Lindsay at her house.
Yes, who, by the way, is Kyle Richards, my girl.
For those of you who don't know, it's of Beverly Hills housewife fame. My wife told me this morning. I was like, no, it's not. And then I look, it totally is her.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. It's totally
for Bravo. Let me tell you. I know my girls want to see him. There she is. She was precious.
So precious. But basically, so she's Annie's cooking dinner for Lindsay.
Uh huh.
And she's in the kitchen, and all of a sudden she spills something on her shirt and her pants. And for some reason she decides in her client's house, she takes off her pants.
Oh, yeah.
And her shirt and is standing there in just her underwear, full chest exposed.
Yeah.
In her client's house. She then proceeds to take the husband's shirt and wears it right before she dies.
Yeah. And there's so many funny, weird, quirky things about these characters.
Also, like, she gets stuck in a window.
Yeah.
How does she get stuck?
Which is just sad. You see her in the bin, you're like, really? You're stuck? Like that? That's how you're stuck? Like, no. Like, the shit they get up to is so funny that you, and I guess part of that is, like, they do that on purpose to, like, annoy you, that, like, you don't mind that they die a little bit. I don't know. Maybe I'm
reading too much into it. And it's funny because everybody always asks John Carpenter, it's like, do the kids, teenagers die because they're having sex? And it's right. like, no, they die because they're preoccupied with, they're oblivious and they're preoccupied because A, they're horny teenagers yeah. and they just want to have sex.
Yeah.
Because there was no internet back then. Right. There wasn't 1,000 television cables.
Yeah. I guess if that is the reason that yeah. nowadays this would have to only be, and you know, I don't think they did this in the new one, but it'd have to be kids on their phones.
Literally dying. Kids just like looking down and chop, yeah. chop, chop.
They always used to stand next to each other doing that too. It's easy.
And I always thought it was, here's kind of off topic, but like the butcher knife. I uh-huh. literally thought, I was like thinking about why the butcher knife. And it thinks, it's like, think about this. Carving a pumpkin back in the day, yeah. they didn't have like a bazillion things to like, oh, carve your pumpkin with these tools.
Yeah, no, I think it was specifically a pumpkin carving knife. Like yeah. to make you think
like
of Halloween.
Like
a
giant, yeah. like shiny knife. And I'm like, I love that because it's more so realistic yeah. in this world. It's like Michael Myers is realistic.
Yeah.
Jason, Freddy, they're not realistic. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can argue Jason.
But anybody could do what Michael Myers is doing and has, unfortunately. Like, there's been psychos. There's been yeah. killers. And I think that's so true. There's not that supernatural factor. So you can take out the suspend your disbelief. It's like, no, I actually can believe this.
Because, I mean, think about the 70s. It was like we had Ted Bundy and Jeffrey Dahmer. It's like this was like the height of yeah. like serial killers almost.
Speaking of which, have you been watching Mindhunter?
You know, it's funny. I just finished season one and I'm about to start season two.
Season one. Okay.
Oh my God.
So I'm behind. But that's a perfect. Actually, that show is zeitgeisty for right now.
Yes.
Because I've been watching it with Patrick going, wow, I didn't even think about how this was such a dilemma for law enforcement at the time that they straight up didn't know how to handle this weird phenomenon, which is interesting.
Literally
in itself.
Just exploded. Like it just yeah. all of a sudden there were 100 cases. And like, it was just of these
it
crazy.
It goes to show there are trends in crime, mm-hmm. unfortunately. Right now we're dealing with mass shooters, which is horrible. And
yes.
I think this is very zeitgeisty for what's going on. And I think it's neat to also take a look into that era and how they tried to handle it then with what they had. Mm-hmm. And they really realized we have to dig into the psychology of this. We have to look into the why. And sometimes there is no why. That doesn't make sense. It used to be, like he says in the show, it used to be you see someone stabbed, you look for the spouse or you look for the mm-hmm. the person who's bitter toward them. There's always a motive.
And closest person. Oh, of course the wife did. Yeah. It's like, well, I mean, you know, he was, yeah. it's just crazy.
Now it's like they have to take into account this entirely different criminal mind. And Michael Myers is totally that. He is the guy that goes and kills, and for no fucking reason. To me, this is where I struggle. This is where I struggle, butter. You got to help me here.
I was like, what if he's just like a soldier of heaven and just killing like all bad people and just super straight edge? Because it's like yeah. he literally kills like he doesn't kill Jamie Lee Curtis because, you know, she gets away. But yeah. it's like, you know, she didn't really do anything but smoke a little bit of pot in right. one scene. Like that's
and dress like a librarian, yeah. you know, God forbid. I think that was her only crime, but that was how she would have been. I think what's, and I wrote a, like a little bit of notes because I was like, what is it that is bugging me?
Oh, okay.
I tried. So trust me, I love this movie, especially at Halloween time. You got to have this on at some point, you know, the atmosphere, the lighting, Dean Cundey, you are an incredible cinematographer. Got to meet him, by the way, time. And he's a very interesting man. So good. Just what they had to work with, they used it so well.
Again, they only had a $300,000 budget. And like today, that's nothing. And it's like the movie went on to make $47 million.
Isn't that crazy?
And another crazy fact, $20,000 went to hiring Donald Pleasness. He plays the doctor. He plays Michael's doctor.
Oh,
and it's funny though, $20,000 went to just having this man on set for 5 days. He literally was only on set for 5 out of the 20 days. Yeah. And it's crazy.
Like, and he was so, John Carpenter was like really intimidated by him.
That's what I heard.
Yeah. He was like, okay, whatever you want. Or, you know, like if anytime he had suggestions, he was like, yeah. Like we'll go with what you, because he was like
the most seasoned person on the set. Yeah. And like, that makes sense. It's like, this was like Jamie Lee Curtis' like first big movie. Mm-hmm. Like she was in a few like TV shows and stuff, but this is her first big breakout role. And like, you know, you're up with like Donald Pleasness and like
wild.
It's crazy. You
know? I think overall, I very much enjoy this movie. There are issues I have with it, and just also having done a lot of theater, I struggle with the fact that there is not a reason for Michael Myers to do what he does. Mm-hmm. And not only is there not a reason, like maybe, okay, that's supposed to be a mystery, I'll try to accept that. However, when he does go to kill people, it's in the killing that I'm not understanding what's setting him off to kill them.
Well, he could just have a problem with shitty babysitters because his sister...
Which is hilarious.
Because his sister was a shitty babysitter, so... Because she'd rather have sex than watch him. And then, of course, Annie and Linda.
Yes. This is what I'm talking about. Insight.
So don't be a shitty babysitter.
Yeah.
Or like the kids randomly...
Don't use the laundry of your client's house and get naked and then just like put on their own clothes.
Or feel it's okay to sneak into somebody's house randomly. Drinking nobody you've never met before. Drink a bunch of beer, smoke in their bed, and have sex in their bed. While, here's my other question. Where are the parents? How are they gone all night? Like, are they away for the weekend?
Let's be real. The parents are definitely partying more than the kids in this. They're having weird motel sex somewhere.
Like, why didn't Michael go kill the parents, too? Why was it just teenagers?
That's what I'm saying. There's so many questions as to just like why, and they keep implying over and over, even though they deny this kind of, they keep implying that it's because the sexuality. It's like, oh, that woman's being sexual, you know? Oh, she's naked. Oh, she's talking about being sexual. Oh, she's actually having sex with so and so. Oh, it's like all these people seem to be dying either after having sex or. Talking about, like, with Annie, it's, like, talking about doing it and, like, also getting ready to go do that, whatever it is. Like, seems to be, like, female sexual behavior seems to be the trigger, and yet it seems like he's still going to go after Lori, who could not be
But, like, more... what was the thing with Lori? Was it literally just because there's that scene where, like, her father's a realtor, I believe, and she like, goes to the old Myers house.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, it's like, he's there, but it's like, is that the reason why he hunts her down specifically?
He's the first person he sees.
You know what I mean?
I don't know.
Why Lori, you know? Yeah. And that was kind of the thing, it was a plot hole that I was like, okay, they should have, you know, talked about that a little bit.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of people have theorized, like, oh, they might be related, and he wants to finish the job of killing his family or whatever, but... that's never been a thing, and it's frustrating that there's not quite enough there, and that always, to this moment, it frustrates me.
Or the other scene that kind of, like, is more of, like, makes me, like, just scratch my head is the scene where the doctor is out in the middle of, like, the cemetery, and Judith Gray's gone.
Yeah.
Why is it gone? I was curious about that, you know? It's like, I thought Michael... didn't approve of his sister, or maybe he just loved his sister too much.
I don't know.
It's an incest thing.
Yeah. And I think, and some people have argued that. Some people have said, well, he's kind of, instead of, like, you know, masturbating after he sees, his naked sister or whatever, he, like, stabs her instead. And so it's, like, a different climax or whatever.
It's like, why didn't he kill the guy, too? Like, but, like, is that the thing, too? Does he only kill
the women?
Female?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Does he only go after females?
Yeah. To me, it's very... There's just too many questions. And I don't mind there being an air of mystery.
No.
But you still need some clarity. And it struggles for me on that border. That there's, you know, it doesn't hit it right for me.
Because the movie, in my opinion, was kind of written almost like a short story. Like, it's really basic. Kid kills sister, goes away to sane asylum. Mm-hmm. Doctor, we see doctor going to the asylum. Guy breaks out, steals car, goes back home, and then it's just...
And then just kills people.
Just kills people.
It's like half a movie, structurally.
And that's what they said. It's like they found it hard to fill, because they wanted to make it at least almost an hour and a half to fill for, like, TV slots for when they were going to re-syndicate it. Uh-huh. And they were like, oh, we had to add some more stuff. And I'm like, okay, I can see that, because it's like... There's a few plot holes, but I still wish there was, like, you know, a few
more insight,
more answered questions.
Yeah, more answers to the questions. That for me has always been the one issue. The thing I like about Michael Myers is everything we kind of said, where he's very motionless and spooky, and he doesn't have to do a lot to really creep you out.
No.
And the tension they build around him is perfect. You know, they have so much to work with that's almost perfect.
And the thing I love about John Carpenter is not only does he write and direct his movies, he does the majority of the music too. Like that classic theme, Halloween, he wrote.
Perfect.
Like, his father helped him write that yeah. you know, that melody, because is that
it's
like a 5/4 like repeat or something. I forget what it is, but it's in a
I'm
special,
musically challenged, exactly. But I know it's something special.
Yeah, it's something special. But I just like it instantly grabs you too, because like it starts off though, you know, the movie starts off and it's just like old school Jack Lantern, love it. Nothing crazy, just you know, the triangle eyes and the love. Mouth. And I always thought it's just, it looks so creepy. And it's just a, you know, slowly close up on the Jack Lantern's face and you just hear the
And it's just like, it's just getting you ready. It's it's setting the mood. And then I actually love the whole opening too. I mean, I don't like that his sister gets murdered.
Literally it's a six-year-old boy sad. Murders like his sister.
It just was, like you said, shot really, really well. I just hate that plot point.
that was actually one of the hardest shots in the scene in the movie too, because it actually, they said it took almost 2 full days of shooting just to get that whole point of view, like, you know, shot, which I loved. I thought that was such a cool little way to do it.
Perfect
which
way was to like start it off.
Kids coming home from trick-or-treating, you know, his babysitter sister is like being a bitch and hanging out with smoking and drinking.
And yeah. And there's something to be said for the basic, the black and whiteness of it, you know, from innocence to sin constantly being presented throughout the whole movie. It's like, and I think that's what's cool about Halloween itself, because in our Western culture, in our society, we're so, within the past like 70 years, we've really told ourselves Halloween is a children's holiday, and there's an innocence to that and the trick-or-treating and all of that. But there's so much sin under the blanket.
I think it's literally history. Yeah, like nowadays, it's like Michael probably kill everyone. You know, not everyone, but like a lot more people, because it's just like Halloween is not a tainted holiday. I mean, I still love it, but it's like it's not what it used to be. Right. You know, like I enjoy it, but it's still like it's. I felt like it's more for like kids, and then like
our generation really has change things. We've taken it back, and in some ways that's great. In other ways, we've just like made it this slut fest. Like it's just constant, and it's just like have that if you want, but like honor something about the holiday. You know what I mean? Like show some respect for the holiday.
Exactly, because I mean this is a holiday. You know, it's not like Valentine's Day that was just made by Hallmark. Right. You know, sell more cards.
Right.
Like this is something that's been going.
And sin is kind of part of that holiday. So true. I'm not slut shaming, but I'm just saying, you know, have a little bit of honor for the traditions that we had growing up if you're going to take it back. What are your favorite parts of this movie?
So again, like I really love like just those long shots where it's just like you hear the girls talking about what the plans are for that day. You see Michael and literally you just see him from like his shoulder or like you don't even see his, you really never even see his face up until like when he's like really hunting Annie and Lori in the houses, you know? And one of my favorite shots was when he is going, so he just killed Linda in the car. Sorry, he just killed Annie in the car and Linda and her boyfriend Will just had coitus. So he's like, go, I'm going to go get a beer, babe. And they have this whole stupid, like...
Such a dumb exchange.
So 70s, like, dumb exchange. Yeah. So he goes down and get a beer, a brewski.
Yeah.
And Michael is in the kitchen and he stabs him. But the way he stabs him was like, he stabs him against the wall. But literally, you just see, like, the life, like, his leave. Like, because his feet were all, like, curled up and stuff. But you literally see his feet just, like, fall. Like, you literally see his soul leave his body. And you just see Michael just standing there, not doing anything, like just looking
at
like.
He just looks at him.
This
all
is like, oh, this is normal to me.
Yeah.
You know?
And he like kind of does that head tilt, which was very interesting. That's such a good spooky part. That's like when you're like, oh, God, this is really, really creepy. This isn't just like messed up, but it's like, ugh. Like, you know, I like moments like that where you. And again, not to offend, but. With horror, I am not as much a huge fan just because I feel like there's less art in it and there's more just blood, gore, bullshit. This has some, you know, obviously there's killing.
Yeah.
But even he tried to not go too over the top with the gore itself.
No.
And I thought he did a great job with that because he still kept it a slasher, still had killing in it, But there were artful moments like that, like you just described.
Like, you know, it's like when he steals the doctor's car and is like leaving, it's like, oh, they find a truck on the side of the road and mm-hmm. there's just a guy in the bushes. You didn't need to have this huge bloody scene where he's like bludgeoning right. him or like stabbing him and dragging
like
his body
convey,
out.
It's convey,
yeah,
you know?
It's like, oh, okay, I understand. He went from here, did this, and now he's somewhere else.
Which I think is great because I know he was very much inspired by Alfred Hitchcock.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and which is why he cast Jamie Lee Curtis.
I know. I think it's funny.
Like, I'm going to kind of pay homage to
I'm my kicking
favorite.
Myself that I never got that before. That's her mom in Psycho. And like, I never knew that. But it's like now Jamie that Lee. It's like you literally look at their faces.
Yeah.
Very similar face with facial features.
Crazy. Her and Tony Curtis.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd love that he was like, okay, I'm going to still have a like very what was then very modern slasher, you know, and have this sort of slasher structure. You know, one by one they die until the kind of innocent
the final girl
has to fight off mm-hmm. the killer. And this was in the height of that, you know, they'd had what Texas Chainsaw Massacre initially and a couple others. So this was like really kicking that off. And even that being said, even it being categorized as one of those slashers, it still got, you know, it still hides enough for you to keep some mystery there to keep you intrigued, mm-hmm. I think.
And it's interesting. Like, does Hollywood, like, has Hollywood been doing this for so long where it's like they pick like it's usually a female lead mm-hmm. in these horror movies or these big sci-fi things. And I'm like, I always felt that was a great thing for women. Like that's a great female empowerment thing to like have like, okay, she's not the damsel in distress. Mm-hmm. It's like, yes, in some scenes she might be, but overall it's like she survives, she kicks his ass. Yeah. Like
I think that's such a good point because one of the things, again, me being not the biggest horror fan, one of the things that makes me avoid some horror movies is because I don't want to watch the brutality that happens towards women specifically.
Because there's a lot. I mean, like, you know.
Horrible stuff that they, and people can watch this shit and be totally fine with it. And that makes me sick. So I can't take torture. I can't take rape scenes. I can't take that stuff. And to me, that's what makes me as a viewer just avoid it, you know, in so many instances. But like you said, there is sort of like that ending. That must be the thing that keeps this okay. It keeps them getting away with creating these movies.
Because, you know, like, I'm not saying like it's an even divide between male and female, but I feel like there's mm-hmm. a huger following, a slightly bigger following of females with horror for some reason.
Yeah.
And I love that. You know, it's like a whole thing that like, you know. Like, I love that Sigourney Weaver is Ripley, you know, and she's the badass heroine
that's
beaten every alien in four movies, you know?
There's something to be said for that. And I think in the 80s, there was a movement of, like, female empowerment, and that this helped play a role in that. And as far as, you know, women kind of being big horror fans, this is interesting you said that, because women are actually really big true crime fans.
That's, oh my God, that is 100% true.
Yeah, and you know what I think?
What is with women and murders?
Well,
they love killers.
This is my little theory. This is, we're unfortunately our prey. We're constantly a little curious as to shit to avoid, ways to protect ourselves.
One of my other favorite things about this movie, and again, I don't know if John Carpenter was like the first person to pave the way for it, but like, I always love the shots where it's like, okay, we'll use this as an example of like when Jamie Lee, after she basically took down Michael at the very, like almost to the very end. And then she goes to tell the two kids, like, go run, tell the cops, I'll stay here. Just go next door.
I know.
But it's such a cool shot because she's like, she's leaning against the doorway and it's full focus on her.
Yes.
But in the background, you literally just see Michael stand up and like, as if nothing happened. I love when they do that.
It gives me chills.
Seriously.
Oh,
it's just
God.
So cool because it's like,
and he's
we're
silent.
Focused on this, but you just literally see, like, it doesn't need to be in focus to see, like, just literally, like, you're like, I know exactly. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. It's like Michael standing up. You're like, you know exactly what's about to happen.
And it's so true that they purposely did not put it in focus. Mm-hmm. It's like, there's a shady figure behind you. Like, that is so creepy.
But just adds to the tension, I feel, because it's like, you really don't know, like, you see a shadowy figure stand up, but it's like, you don't know what he's going to do. He's still, like, figuring out, like, what, does she not see him? Because she not here?
Yeah,
you know?
And that's the suspense of it all.
Oh.
You know, it's when you can see what's coming and they can't, and you, it's like a human instinct to want to help.
Or it's like, I was reading online how people were, like, like, I love fanboys and stuff where they get so into a movie where they just have to critique everything.
Oh, I know.
One of the biggest critiques I read online was, how did Michael learn how to drive the car? I'm like, wait, what? And it was like, well, okay, Michael was 6 years old when he was taken into the ward, and then he was in there for 15 years, so where did he learn how to drive a car? Hi. Maybe the one time he was in Dr. blah, blah, blah's car, he saw him driving and immediately learned how to drive a car. I'm like, what? How hard is it to drive a car? It's not like a bicycle.
Yeah, you know? I think you can figure it out. You switch a few gears, you're pretty...
There's two pedals and one wheel.
All you do is you trial and error that shit.
But like people had to go all the way back to like Halloween 6 to be like, oh, here's the reason why.
Yeah.
This is the reason.
I know. That's another funny thing about this movie and just about the franchise. The following is, I mean, they're heavy.
No.
They're obsessive about this movie. And they like, they're the people that when I, as someone who is not as knowledgeable, will look up, you know, what are Michael Myers' fucking motivations? What are his intentions? When you Google that shit, you will find these folks jumping on there, and bless their hearts, they know a lot of shit.
They know, yeah.
And they have studied. It's not to say that they're wrong, but I just think a lot of it's just pure speculation because there isn't anything there.
No, again, this is a fictitious person, so it's like it's really...
So you're
kind
just
of
filling in
almost.
Blanks.
Yeah, we're all just filling in blanks about this guy. So when John Carpenter was in college, when he was working on the, like, writing the movie, he spent a little time working in a psychiatric ward.
Oh,
and when he was there, he saw this little boy, and he said that literally he had the look of pure evil in his eyes. And that's the basis of Michael. It's like, what if there was just...
Yeah,
like,
he just
like this
like
kid grew up
pure.
Perfectly. He had a loving home, but all of a sudden he just snaps and he's the devil, you know?
It's so scary.
Like, and that's what I love about Michael is he can become anybody. Anybody can become him.
Right.
Just takes
I love that element of
a jumpsuit and a big ass butcher knife.
Gotta have the jumpsuit.
I love the jumpsuit. It's practical. It's not like some red and green striped sweater and a fedora or a hockey mat. It's literally just a jumpsuit he got out of some like garage and boom.
Yeah. You know, it's such a good point.
Cleans out the blood easily.
It's not, there's nothing flashy or Halloween-y there's nothing like ridiculous about it. I feel like all these characters, they, you know. Obviously, with it, all these costumes get so frivolous, but it's just so funny. And then again, that's the thing I respect about Michael Myers. Like, there's nothing frivolous. And he does not do this for fame. He does not do this for attention.
No.
There's some weird, just inner thing that he's just gotta kill. It's just his jam. But again, speaking of what are his intentions and stuff, he doesn't kill the children. He just seems to go after the teenagers.
Just the teenagers. I always thought that was interesting, too. It's like, okay, and they're mostly only females, too, like what we said before.
Like his sister. They were just teenagers.
But
I don't know.
It's just, it's very bizarre, you know?
It's like, I just love killing teens, man.
Well, same as like Jason. He just mindlessly kills teenagers. Like, I wish there was more of a thought process behind Jason.
I mean, I know everybody hates teenagers.
Oh, everyone hates teenagers. Teenagers doing it.
That's the worst. Oh, seriously. Any final thoughts that you just...
Personally, I want to give it up to Miss Jamie Lee Curtis because when she first... Again, she was the only girl who was actually a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
And again, this was before all the laws of where you couldn't be working after night and stuff.
Yeah.
And from day one, she thought she wasn't good enough. And John Carpenter had to call her all the time to reassure that you are good for this role. Jamie Lee Curtis has been in at least 5 or 6 Halloween movies.
Yeah.
Crazy fact, she's been in a Halloween movie every decade since the 70s. Like the 1978 is when this one came out. And then there's one in the 80s, 90s, 2000s,
it's so
2010
true.
With the most recent one.
Yeah.
Which is still a continuing of her story. And that's what I love. It's like, hey, she knows why she's famous, kind of because of this role of Laurie that really set her apart from a lot of other girls at that time. And then from there, it's like, I'm glad that she at least came back and still was like, yeah, I'll probably make me a badass older Lori who's going to like fucking take on Michael. Yes. I love that. Yeah. You know?
No, I liked, and I have not seen the new Halloween.
I haven't either, but I want to. I
love the approach they took with it.
Yeah.
They had to do pretty much exactly that.
Similar approach to this one from what I've seen.
Yeah.
But again, I love it. You know? Yeah.
It's so cool. Like you pointed out that she has consistently stayed Lori, and I absolutely love that too, because I think some actors, they can get a little egotistical or snotty about it, or they get stubborn about how the character continues to be written, and it's like, she just seems to go with it and know, like, that that's her, and, like, how funny is it that, she was insecure in the beginning, because it goes to show when you're young, you just don't always know maybe what you're meant to do or right. You're meant for, and, like, how interesting is it that it worked out, like, imagine if she hadn't done it, you know?
It's like we've had like, six, seven people play Batman, but right. We've had one Lori the whole consistency. Yes. And that's what I got to say, you know?
Yeah. There's something to be said for it for sure. I think she does a great job. I think she's super talented in it. I think the kids were great in it.
Seriously, for just being like just dumb kid, not dumb kid, but just being like normal kids on Halloween watching movies and stuff. They still like, but it had some terror to them too. Because it's for like, sure. I totally forgot, like Michael literally goes in the house and the kids are still in the house.
Right.
Like, and she's like locks them and like.
Totally. I think again, another thing to respect about her, like we were saying before, like the other kids are just so oblivious. It's like fun to kill them or easy to kill them for Michael. But for she's a good babysitter. So she's actually caring.
That's
about what I'm saying.
That's the reason why she doesn't die. Yeah. It's because she's a good babysitter.
And she's fucking paying attention. She's taking care of the kids. Like, good for her. And, like, not only do they survive, but, like, Michael doesn't even bother going after them.
No.
Which I just find interesting. Because they would be easy. But, yeah, clearly he just wants to kill teens. but I don't know. Speaking of the kids, I like the whole boogeyman business.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah.
I think.
Where they refer to Michael as, like, the boogeyman. Yeah.
Because we've all heard the term, but have never actually put a specific look or face or trope to the boogeyman.
Exactly. It's always just been this creature or person.
This
or
idea, very much like the thing.
Yeah, you know,
it's
exactly.
It's just this idea of a bad being that's a male figure, and that's all that it is. Mm-hmm. And they're going to get you. End of story. And that's what Michael is anyway. And so I love that he's already had this idea in his head, and then, because of the bullies. And then later, when he sees him, he's like, he puts that together and calls him that, and that's exactly what he already is anyway. Like, it just worked so well.
Yeah.
And then the dialogue in the very end with her and Dr. Loomis, where she's like, it really was the boogeyman. Like, that was just on point.
See, and that was, the end is one of my favorite shots of the movie, too. Mm-hmm. It's because it's literally like, Michael and the doctor are in the house and they have this little scuttle, and the doctor shoots him a few times and Michael falls out of the house. Mm-hmm. And the doctor looks back at Lori to see if everything's fine, and then looks and Michael's gone.
Just gone after being shot like seven times.
Like, is this guy 50 Cent, man?
Right?
But the really cool thing, what they do is like, it's all a bunch of reshots from scenes we've seen in the movie. But under it, you just hear him breathing. It's just like the subtle just...
So spooky.
And then, like, the slowly there's music
no,
builds.
Like, no. There's none of that bullshit. It's just a man
just breathing. And I existing. Love it because it's like he's literally watching us. Yeah. Like, he's always watching us no matter what. And he's alive. And I'm like, that to me was a really great way to end
The way that he stalks her throughout the film. And then just, like you said, that ending to top it all off is like, wait, we couldn't even kill him?
Exactly.
Like, what? No, he could come back anytime. Like, that's the fear instilled. And, like, from a lady's perspective, it's like you as a woman are constantly having to be a little concerned about that. Mm-hmm. And so they captured that. I don't know if John Carpenter's intention was to totally get that on point, but he did. And I think that's another reason why this kind of has a timelessness to it.
Like, I mean, it couldn't be, like, you couldn't really do the movie today, but it's, like, it's almost like it could. Like, you literally could just have that same kind of premise of, like, somebody just stalking these girls, and all of a sudden he just snaps and wants to kill them.
Right.
You know what I mean?
And I guess that's so true. I was saying to Patrick, like, you can't totally do this movie the way that it is today just because we have grown up with, so much more that, and we wouldn't have without this, but we kind of need a little extra. We need a little more. And we, at the very least, need his motivation.
Exactly.
Or at least his intentions when he's doing these things. And that's what's frustrating. I think if we'd had some more intention with when he kills, maybe not his overall motivation, it actually would have helped build more suspense.
Because a little bit more backstory, because, I mean, literally it goes from him stabbing his sister mm-hmm. to then time jump 15 years later to him breaking out. There really isn't much backstory.
No.
It's literally just
that's
like, oh,
get.
He killed his sister. Oh, there's something with the old Myers house. Mm-hmm. But that's it. I wish there was just a little bit more, like, were his parents shitty? Like, mm-hmm. what was the reason? You know, it's like, could there have been
right.
more? But that's what I was saying earlier. It's like, it just has this short story kind of feel,
right.
which where it's like, I think it's more about Lori, you know?
Mm, yeah.
But also it's about Michael and how anybody can become this creature
yeah.
almost.
That's actually a good point. It could just, in like the when you step back and look at it, be more Lori's story and
yeah.
her being the victor and the whole thing. I think also just having Dr. Loomis there,
oh, Loomis,
like without having to really convey specifically, because he doesn't explain shit either.
He doesn't really. He's just
all he says is
like mumbling.
He's so dangerous.
Yeah,
he's just like he's
right,
just
right,
dangerous.
Right.
And it's like, well, okay, you don't fucking give us exposition, but the fact that you're here and you're this concerned about it, like we know what your intention is. That in itself could help convey the seriousness, even if it's a mystery. We
mm-hmm.
can gather the seriousness, and therefore that can help us be concerned. Because sometimes if we don't have, you know, those other answers, we don't feel as connected or concerned or interested. And I felt like just Dr. Loomis existing and being concerned and trying to chase him down, that helped.
Definitely Dr. Loomis gave him the human, like a human side.
Yes.
More, like saying like, oh, there's not somebody who cares for him, but still there's somebody out there that's willing to go through all this
and
to make
risk
sure
his
like
life that
literally
no one
risk,
has to be affected by
yeah.
him. Yeah, that's crazy to think about. So just that alone was such a simple plot element
yeah.
and it worked. And it worked well. This is random, but it makes me think of like, did you ever see True Detective, the first season?
Yeah, no. And okay. I always hate myself because I hear it's amazing.
I gotta tell
you. The first
you.
Season's really good.
So the first season, the more disturbing one, there's a video that they find that they don't show you what's on this video, but they show everyone's reaction to the video. And it's just, again, that mystery of like, we don't know the details, but we know the impact of those details.
Yes, because we're feeling the emotions through them as they watch it.
Right.
You know what I mean?
And I think that, again, Loomis being there is that impact of the details that we are unaware of.
Mm-hmm.
We just know shit is bad if Michael is back in town.
Yeah, because he was like, oh, I was his doctor for like 8 years or something like that. I forget what it was.
Yeah.
He was like his doctor for at least more than half his time in the psychiatric ward.
Yeah. So. I mean, that's crazy too.
Yeah.
So I think overall, we really have a lot of good things to say about
Halloween.
I think
we did, honestly. I'm yeah. really surprised. I'm happy surprised.
Yeah. It's a great movie.
Yeah.
It's a classic. It takes place on Halloween night, the whole thing. So,
in my opinion, it definitely has rewatch value. Because my thing is
yeah.
like, you know, like horror movies, it's like, how many times can you watch Freddy
yeah.
number 4? You know what I mean? But
yeah.
this first one is so iconic and
mm-hmm.
it's just beautifully shot, and like even like the the music, it has one of the most iconic like theme songs,
yeah,
or themes,
even
you know?
If it's not like your jam, it's definitely worth watching and certainly appreciating just for what it is and for what it did for horror and what it did for, you know, suspense. And
I mean, would you call this like the ultimate like Halloween movie in a way you know
I
mean?
Would call this an ultimate slasher.
Okay, I like
but
that.
But for me, speaking of Halloween, I personally, again, this is because I'm from the future, you know, I'm from a different time than this. I like things to be a little bit more festive if they're going to be surrounded by Halloween or have Halloween either in the background
gotcha.
Or as the plot. I mean, I grew up with Hocus Pocus and Halloween Town, so maybe that's my level is absurd.
Yeah. Super campy and gaudy.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be gaudy. It doesn't have to be campy. I just need maybe more than one pumpkin, but they had one, and that makes me happy, too.
So. Honestly, there was a pumpkin in quite a few shots. I was like hoping that was like a reasoning for that, you know, maybe like a spooky, like, oh, everyone, somebody's gonna die now, there's a pumpkin.
Oh yeah, yeah.
But it's more, I think it's just kind of, I bet there's a reasoning for the pumpkins, but I think it's just more of like still to show that it's a holiday season. It's, you know,
I think exactly. I think just it on its own simply is good enough and great for Halloween. But is it my personal go-to Halloween movie? I guess not. Not that that has to be Hocus Pocus or has to be,
it is. It's probably Hocus Pocus.
It's definitely, that's one of them for sure. But yeah, I think this is definitely still a must for Halloween. Like you got to at least enjoy it either once a year or once every couple Halloweens. Like it's just great.
Exactly. Ooh.
So here at Salem and Binks Present, for every movie, we like to have a little drinking game at the very end since you made it through the analytical discussion. So, Butter.
In my opinion, you're going to need a cocktail and at least a few shots. Because the way I would say it was like,
yes.
Anytime you see a pumpkin, you take a big drink and say,
like
Happy Halloween.
Like a sip. Yes.
Every time Michael kills somebody, you take a drink. And you point to somebody else as your victim and they take a drink too.
Yes, I love it. I think that's the first on the show where we've been giving out drinks.
There you go.
I like that a lot more. Every time they say boogeyman, take a sip.
Ooh, because they say, especially that one scene, boogeyman.
Oh, yeah. You know what? In that scene where all the kids are like waterfall. Saying that, you chug. That's the chug moment. You got to just drink until those bullies disappear. Until Michael comes up and scares the bully away.
And awkwardly follows the kid.
Yeah.
And then even in the car is following the kid and the kid has no idea somebody's watching him. I would definitely, like, I feel when somebody's like just staring at me, I would definitely feel that there was somebody following me in a car.
Especially a man with a mask on. It's just so creepy.
How did he learn to drive?
Yeah. Apparently that's a huge, huge debate. How did he learn to drive?
In cinephiles, you know, it's a huge debate.
How did he, how did he learn to kill people at age 6 without the strength? What I want to know. One thing when you're 30, Jesus
That was
Christ.
A little like, it's like, did he really stab her? It was like kind of just like a...
Well, she didn't fight back. No. I mean, I'm not victim blaming. I'm just saying she just kind of sat there and was like, Michael.
True. I was like, she's like, oh.
I don't know why. When Annie's singing and like just keeps singing like to herself, like why is she... I don't know why she does it, but it's really annoying. I don't know. Just take a shot when she... is starting to sing and just because you're going to need that shot to deal with the singing.
Through the emotional struggle and stress you're going to go through.
Yeah. And obviously she dies right after. So you're going to need that shot to really help you there.
Why do bad singers love to sing?
I don't know.
They just love to sing. It's like maybe they just love hearing their own voice.
I know. It's sad. God, it's sad. I guess when we realize that Michael disappeared, finish your drink.
Make your drink disappear.
Make your drink disappear. Brilliant.
Or you could have been like, all right, once Dr. Loomis shoots Michael that 6 times, you got to do 6 shots. All right, ready, boom.
Can you imagine?
You're going to need a bucket and some alcohol.
Yes, you are going to do some porcelain hugging for this one. I love it. Well, Butter, it has been awesome to have
this
you
This was
on
a pleasure.
I
hope to be back again.
Definitely. I am so glad that I had you on here to talk about one of the ultimate classic Halloween flicks.
Honestly, classics.
Seriously, guys, watch this movie if you haven't. It's iconic.
Well, this was fun.
This was so much fun. Thank you, folks, for tuning in.
Thank you, guys. Hopefully you like, comment.
Yes, like, comment, subscribe on the website for the mailing list, and also become a member on the website. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Pinterest.
Ooh.
Yes. Thank you to my big brother and our big sponsor, Bijan Sharifi. Thank you so much for the equipment. You are the best. And thank you to our producer, Fiona, who is, as always, taking a nice little cat nap next to us.
She was hard at work earlier. You know, she deserves that cat nap.
I know. This little chunkette. I'm looking forward to doing more Halloween movies. If you have any suggestions for more Halloween movies, we'll take requests. Otherwise, we're going to do the Halloween movies that we wanted to. Which can go from really good to really shitty, really
bad. So it's going to be Halloween Town, Hocus Pocus, anything you've heard today. So please, suggestions.
Every made-for-TV Halloween movie ever. Oh my God.